Alrighty there, folks, and welcome to the Chronicle Podcast Channel, episode 17, The Qin Dynasty. So this episode is going to start not with Yin Zheng, the man who would be called Qin Shi Huang, but a man named Lu Bu Wei. Lu Bu Wei was not a king or a noble, but a merchant, and he wasn't even from the state of Qin, but the state of Wei. He was, by all accounts, an extremely skilled merchant, as well as an incredibly rich one, almost as powerful and as rich as kings or nobles at the time. Now what happened was that Lu Bu Wei was travelling towards the state of Zhao, doing what he did, you know, selling goods at very high prices and then, you know, getting stuff for cheaper at lower prices. Basically being the good merchant that he was. What Lu Bu Wei didn't expect to find was a prince, and not just any prince, but the Prince of Qin. His name was Zichu, and he wasn't there on a holiday, but was actually there as a political hostage. Zhao thought that this would guarantee their safety from their aggressors to the west, and it just so happened that even though Zichu was a prince, he was the grandson of the current king, and he had like 20 brothers. So he wasn't seen as the most valuable of hostages. However, Lu Bu Wei sought to change that. And Lu Bu Wei, being the skilled merchant that he was, seen an opportunity in the young prince. Lu Bu Wei immediately set about befriending the prince and making sure that he was loyal to him. And eventually, the two came to an agreement. The agreement was that Lu Bu Wei would ensure Prince Zichu that he would be the crown prince and he would become the king of Qin when the time was right. And in return, Zichu would give Lu Bu Wei the position of prime minister, which was second in line. That is, of course, if he could deliver on his promise. Not a bad deal, right? So after striking the deal, Lu Bu Wei set off to the state of Qin with his followers and started making bribes. connections. And he finally wormed his way to Zichu's stepmother, the wife of the current crown prince. There, he used his silver tongue, almost literally, to form a coalition with her and to make Zichu the crown prince. She didn't have a son of her own, so she agreed, no questions asked. The thing is, Lu Bu Wei had to wait for two generations to pass before his investment bore any fruit. However, being the shrewd businessman he was, he knew long-term investments were the best kind, and patience was the key. Unfortunately, he had to do everything to keep the young prince happy in order to gain anything from his investment, even if it meant giving his favourite girlfriend, wife, concubine, whatever you want to call her, to the prince, which is actually what happened. One night, Lu Bu Wei and Zichu had a few drinks, and one of the dancers, Zhao Ji, immediately caught Zichu's eye, and he asked for her hand in marriage. And it just so happened to be Lu Bu Wei's girl. Now, not wanting to lose his investment, Lu Bu Wei put on his green hat and allowed the marriage to happen. You noticed that I said green hat there, right? You didn't mishear me, I did speak correctly. If you wear a green hat in China, it means your partner or wife or husband has had an affair. And that is why, if you search for hats on Taobao, which is Chinese Amazon basically, you will never see green ones for sale. But anyway, back to the story. It's at this juncture where things get kinda weird. So either Zhao Ji was already pregnant with when Zichu asked for her hand in marriage, and Lu Bu Wei pretended that he knew nothing about it, or Prince Zichu had super sperm and got her pregnant really quickly. Regardless of who got her pregnant, 9 months later, she gave birth to Yin Zheng, who would later be called Qin Shi Huang. I think now would be a good time to mention that even though the king married Lu Bu Wei's girl, he still had an affair with her the entire time they were married. and the times seemed to go the conspirators' way, as the current ruler of Qin died, leaving the crown prince spot open for Zichu, and then the new king died only after 1 year, which meant Zichu became the king of Qin in the year 250 BC. The times were going great for Lu Buwei, as he got what he bargained for and was now the chancellor. He's even more rich now. Even more conveniently for Liu Buwei, the reign of the new king didn't last very long either, and he died in 247 BC, which meant he would have to look after the crown prince Yin Zheng until he was ready to rule for himself, and humbly took on the role as prime minister. Now, you must be thinking, Liu Buwei definitely had divine interventions, and you could say that this was possibly true. How could one guy be so lucky? But the good times would come to an end for him after he accomplished everything. His affair with Zhao Ji was now becoming a bit of a liability, as rumours were being swept across the realm that Yin Zheng was actually a bastard child, and who knows, maybe he was. And speaking of Yin Zheng, as time went by, he reached adulthood and looked to strengthen his own power within his state. Things got worse for Liu Buwei as he invited someone who he thought could be trusted to handle his affair. And by handle, I mean basically give Zhao Ji a young boy toy. The guy's name was Lao Ai, and after a while, he actually fancied himself to be king. So he planned a coup, which was discovered, and Yin Zheng dealt with it in a brutal and efficient manner, killing Lao Ai by ripping him in two with chariots. Ouch. Liu Buwei, by association, should have been put to death according to Qin law. However, due to his influence within the Qin court, he managed to get away with just being exiled. He was sent away from the capital, and it was here that Yin Zheng would try and make life a misery. No court members were allowed to visit Liu Buwei or anything, and he chipped away at his psyche. Eventually, Liu Buwei committed suicide. And what about his partner in crime, the Empress Dowager? She died the same year, with unknown causes. Take what you want from that. With what was probably his biggest political rival out of the way, Yin Zheng managed to consolidate and centralise his power even farther than any other Qin king had done before. It was from here that Yin Zheng harboured talented men such as the legalist Han Feizi and Li Si to operate his war machine that he was preparing. It was now time for Yin Zheng to go to war. And not just war with one state, but with all of them. One by one, all of them will fall like dominoes, and the first target on his list was the state of Han. In 230 BC, Qin launched their invasion of Han, and within a year, Han fell. Han were the first domino. After conquering Han, Yin Zheng capitalised on an earthquake and ordered his generals Wang Jian, Zhang Hui, and Yan Duanhe to launch a pincer attack against the state of Zhao. However, an old adversary of theirs was defending Zhao, the general Li Mu, who just so happened to be one of the best generals during the Warring States era, and he was the best defensive strategist. Now his strategy this time was rather simple. Simply avoid a major confrontation with the Qin army, and after a while, the army would pull back and leave, and the day would be saved. However, it didn't happen as planned. Unfortunately for Li Mu, doing something like this seems rather cowardly, and as a result, he was slandered in the Zhao court. What didn't help was that well-placed Qin spies sent bribes to people within the court, who then whispered in the Zhao king's ear, and Li Mu was thrown in jail. Later, Li Mu was executed. Now with their biggest threat out of the way, Wang Jian and all the other Qin generals threw their armies at the Zhao capital, and by 228 BC, Zhao had fallen. Two down, four to go. After Zhao's fall, Yin Zhong did go to the Zhao capital, Handan, after the state fell. But he didn't go there to have a party or a victory parade. He went there to settle old scores. And what I mean is that he went and avenged anyone who had wronged him or his mother during their time there. This is where Yin Zhong spent some of his time as a political hostage, by the way. A lot of heads rolled as Yin Zhong set to work in the capital. So now that Zhao were out of the way, the next state to fall was the state of Yan. Now Yan was a bit trickier, as the leader of the state actually grew up with Yin Zhong when he was a political hostage. The two were old friends, up until Tai Zidan saw what Yin Zhong had become, and what had happened when he became the King of Qin, and he didn't like it one bit. So he swore an oath to never allow Yin Zhong to conquer the realm, or he would die trying to stop him. And we know how this story is going to go. But for now, there was a time of relative quiet between all of the states. Chu, Wei, and Qi wanted nothing to do with what Qin were up to in the north. Qin was just pining for an excuse to try and eliminate Yan to the northeast, and Yan, led by Tai Zidan, was trying to find a way to get rid of Yin Zhong. He finally figured out a plan that he thought might be successful. Playing on his old ties with Yin Zhong, he pretended to be surrendering to Qin, and even sent a man named Jin Ke with a map of Yan, in order to help him with his invasion. Little did anyone know that Jin Ke was actually an assassin who was hiding a blade under his robes. As soon as he saw Yin Zhong examining the map, he seen his opportunity and tried to kill the king. But his guards were ready and cut down the assassin. So much for old pals, Yin Zhong must have thought. But wait a minute, now I can invade Yan. Joke's on you, Danny boy. This gave Yin Zhong the perfect excuse to invade Yan, which is what he was pining for after all. And that's exactly what he ordered his generals to do. Within a year, the state of Yan fell, and Tai Zidan was captured. Three down, three to go. The following year, the general Wang Bin redirected the Yellow River to flood the capital of Wei. The water came pouring into the city, the walls collapsed, and with that, the king surrendered. Four down, two to go. The last major obstacle, really, was the state of Chu, who at least, in terms of the size of the state, rivaled Qin. Now, if Chu had actually tried to help the other smaller states against Qin when they were launching invasions, China may look entirely different today. However, that didn't happen, and instead, the Chu king was about as useless as a eunuch marrying a princess. Good luck getting newborn heirs from that happy marriage. So now that we have established that the Chu king was a bit of an idiot, on with the story. Yin Zhong was planning his invasion and asked his generals, "How many men will we need to conquer Chu?" A young general wanting to impress the king shouted, "200,000! Whereas the old, trusted general Wang Jian whispered, "600,000. Now remember, 600,000 was a huge army to call on in this day and age. And even the most prepared state for war, the state of Qin, would struggle with such an army. The army would need supplies, grain, and not to mention decent infrastructure to travel through the territory. So quite stingily, or maybe wisely, Yin Zhong went with the young general. But the invasion was a disaster, and it failed miserably. Yin Zhong then asked Wang Jian to lead the invasion. The general agreed, if only he could get 600,000 men. To which the king agreed. Now Wang Jian's invasion was a huge success, and he managed to capture the Chu capital within a year. So now that's five down, and one to go. Being completely isolated and surrounded, the King of Qi must have been bitterly regretting not teaming up with someone earlier on. But now, of course, it was too late. So, the king and his court decided to put up a last stand and committed all of their forces to the western border, where they expected the Qin army to attack from. However, the army didn't come from this direction. Instead, it came from the north, where they had been doing some mop-up work with the remnants of the state of Yan. A totally unexpected direction of attack left the capital of Qi completely vulnerable. Now, when the forces arrived at the capital, the Qi king knew his number was up, and he surrendered. And now that was that. All the states had been defeated and conquered in less than a decade. And by 221 BC, Yin Zhang changed his name and declared himself Qin Shi Huangdi, or you could say Qin Shi Huang. And in English, this literally means the first emperor of Qin. So Qin Shi Huang, after unification, believed he would build a dynasty that will last forever, and immediately set to work to give all of the different states one country, one identity, one philosophy. And that, my friends, is where I will leave it. In next week's episode, I will discuss what Qin Shi Huang does as emperor. Because he doesn't just sit in a lavish palace and enjoy all of life's lovely pleasures. I mean, he does do that too, but he actually wants to build a legacy, by any means possible. Now, I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I will see you next time on the Chronicler Podcast channel. Thanks for listening.